This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, welcome again to TST 2023, our 20th anniversary in the studio with two repeat offenders. That is really funny, but on the show before, and I'll introduce them in a minute. We're here at, and as I said, the 20th anniversary of TST, tstseminars.org, G. Trulia, his wife Doreen, and all the volunteers that put a ballroom full, maybe 450 people seeing all the great trainers today. And rumor has it there's a cocktail party later.
Yes.
Yep. Interesting. I'll never miss that. We're not going home till tomorrow. So I am my own personal dedicated walker tonight.
I'm 180 miles away. I wonder what an Uber costs.
Wow. Would you do me a favor?
Sure.
Before we leave, run it on your phone. I'm curious myself. Aaron Becker is here from Aircept. Good to see you. 1 year ago, you were in the studio and we had a great episode.
We did. And it's good to be back.
Thank you so much. And Peter Cole is here, president and COO of, we all used to know it as MAX, but it stood for Mobile Air Conditioning Society. And now it's the Mobile Air Climate Systems
Association.
Association. How cool is that? It was in 1981 that MAX started, right?
We started back in 1981. Simon Olahojian and a group of thieves got together and decided that we needed to do better air conditioning service.
Yeah.
And so kind of started as a very small group and grew into a behemoth. And here we are today.
Yeah, you have your own conference, don't you?
Yeah, we do. We do. We have a nice conference, a lot of technical stuff going on down there, and look forward to doing it again in January.
So we did an episode with Peter and Andy Fifik, who is the chairman of MAX, yep. Episode 774 in August of 2022. And since he was here at TST, and you actually did a really cool training session up there to, if you will, prepare us for tomorrow and how much the government was attached to our hip.
Continues, yes.
Scary. It's all environmental, am I right?
It's under the guise of being environmental. I think that in this particular case, it's the environmental side may take a back seat to some lobbying side. We're trying to fix that.
Who's lobbying? The chemical people?
Well, you know, we're not exactly sure. We think some of the chemical people, or we think some of potentially the folks that do reclamation of refrigerant that are out there that collect all the refrigerant to purify it would like to get a lot more. And in this particular instance, they're looking to target automotive to get that.
Can you put different types of refrigerant in one container, or do they have to be separate?
They would desire them to be separate. If there's value to them, they would like to pay you if they're separate. But it really just makes a big change for the automotive service industry that we know it today. We're not in favor of the change. We're representing our association members in working with the EPA to see how we can craft this legislation that's required to keep the benefits that we have today in a system that's been working for 30 years.
It's no secret we're facing a technician shortage. But rest assured, NAPA Auto Care is addressing that one tech at a time with your help. The free 2-year apprentice program offers a variety of training to produce a technician through 9 stages of curriculum, earning 4 ASC certifications throughout the program. To learn more, members can visit member.napaautocare.com or contact your servicing Napa Auto Parts store's sales rep.
It kind of takes off of the stationary side, I believe, where reclamation is the standard. You collect it into a cylinder and it goes off to a reclamation facility.
Yeah, and that's really what's happened or been the rule since the 1990 Clean Air Act came in. However, in the automotive side, so you're talking about Section 608. In the automotive side, we have Section 609. And 609 is what really led us to recovering refrigerant, recycling refrigerant on site at the point of service, and then recharging the system. And the things that the current legislation, let me back up just a second, that this legislation is part of the AIM Act. The AIM Act was signed December 27th of 2020 under the past administration, and it was a kind of behemoth document. And while I'm not going to recall exactly the page, the part of that we're talking about was like on page 1764.
Oh my.
And it's kind of a couple of paragraphs long. And it encompasses a couple of things. One is a reduction in HFCs. Essentially, HFCs are refrigerants that we use today, like 134A or like 410A in commercial refrigerants. And the idea that we're going to transition to new refrigerants, like we have in automotive, 1234YF.
Yep.
And that we want to be able to reclaim some of the nasty refrigerants or the 134As that we're restricting so that we can have enough supply to service older systems that might need those. Unfortunately, the legislation never carved out an automotive exemption because we in automotive have been doing this in compliance with EPA Section 609 of the Clean Air Act for 30 plus years. And unfortunately, the legislators who wrote this, who were not automotive service technicians or shop owners, they're legislators. They just kind of grouped everybody together and basically said, before you transfer ownership of the refrigerant, you need to have it purified to an appropriate standard by a certified reclaimer. And that's really where the problem comes in. I can't reuse it myself until I send it away and get it back. And that's going to be a challenge.
609. Does the EPA have police out there checking on it?
Have you seen them?
I have not seen them. It'd be nice if they did.
We've often talked about that, that there's a question of whether they could even enforce the rule. But no, what happens with enforcement of EPA 609 is that, first of all, they like the big guys. They figure if Company X has 200 service facilities across the country, and I don't want to use a name because I don't want to suggest that any particular company is a problem, but Company X has 200 service facilities and they get a tip from an ex-employee or something that, oh, by the way, you know what these guys are doing? They're not even recovering the refrigerant. They're just letting it leak to the atmosphere. And the EPA may investigate. And they're investigating because they figure if one of the 200 stores is doing it, then maybe a lot more are doing it. And there's fines related to it. There used to be rewards that if you turn somebody in, you get a reward.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Myron might have benefited from that once or twice. It would be a challenge. Enforcement would be a challenge.
So you guys have known each other since when? 89? When you first started?
Yeah, probably.
Well, not 89. When did 99.
99, probably. Yeah.
Yeah, 1999. Yeah.
You have good stories to tell about each other?
Only few that are safe for work.
You mean appropriate for my audience?
Appropriate for your audience.
Not that I recall.
Oh, very good. I love that. So you've been in front of a judge before, huh?
Not that I recall.
Oh, my God. That is so good.
But Aaron and I, we do go way back. Well, of course, my first interaction wasn't with Aaron. Was with Aaron's father, Myron. Myron and I became very good friends. We had our moments. But we became very good friends over the years.
Yeah.
And but not long after meeting Myron, I was then introduced to Aaron. And then as Aaron did a lot of the traveling, because Myron wasn't really a traveling guy at that point for a lot of events, we kind of hit it off. I don't know why it is. We shared some distributors. And, you know, it's kind of always nice, especially when you're traveling to a foreign country, to have a friendly face kind of thing. And we were texting while you guys were at dinner last night back and forth, and it had nothing to do with business.
No.
No.
Cool. No. Did Myron ever mentor you in any way, or did he feel like he wanted to?
Myron was always a mentor. First of all, Myron was the penultimate salesman.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I know.
He could sell not only ice cubes to Eskimos, but he could tell you you had to defrost them and buy more.
Let me stop you for a moment and tell our listener that I know Myron, too. We lost Myron 9 months ago.
About 10 months ago.
Nine, 10 months ago in his 80s. To the point, consummate salesman, but an inventor too, right?
Sure. And that was always the interesting part of Myron is he always had an idea. And I think at Max, we remembered four people who had really an impact on my career. One was Elvis Hofpower, who was the former president of Max, who we lost late last year. One was Myron. One was John Bruner. And recently, Paul Weisler. You know, Paul Weisler was an automotive writer. And each one impacted differently. And in the case of Myron, Myron was the guy who would stimulate you to think about an idea or about how to do something because no was never an answer in his world. So even when you were kind of sitting there and you're like, Myron, I got this problem with this customer and they're not doing this. And he'd be like, well, have you tried this? And I tried that. He said, well, you didn't try it right. You need to try it this way. And he'd stimulate something. And mentoring is kind of a good word for it because he had so much experience. He also had a face for radio, in case you weren't aware of that.
I sure was. I've been at his house.
So have I. Yeah, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I think it was 13th floor is what I recall. But maybe it wasn't the 13th floor. But he was just right up almost to the end of his life. Almost. I say that because, you know, the last month or two and so forth, we didn't communicate a whole lot because he wasn't feeling too well. But he was ready to go. He wanted you to invest in his idea.
The idea today was better than yesterday's and better than last week's. And if you could keep pace with him, you could see the evolution of his ideas.
Sure.
And where they would come from. Then again, at the same time, the ideas had to be sold. The thing I loved about working with Myron is I'm a strategic thinker. I'm an ideas person. As much as he would challenge me for 2 years in a row, he called me every day because he bumped into me through the podcast. He had done radio in the early days of his shop. He started Aircept, and now he's, if you will, kind of physically challenged. So, you know, the phone was his link to the world.
Mm-hmm. It was. And he was persistent. You know, he came up with an idea. He made sure that you knew about the idea and the people around you knew. And if you said no, then he'd go around you to the people that circle, you know, that are part of your group to make sure they knew about the idea.
And then he would never tell you that he went to someone else. And he'd call you back. He says, what about that idea from yesterday? You know, Dad, I'm still, you know, and well, Charlie thinks it's a good idea.
That's exactly right. And you're like, well, wait a second. Hold on. Who else did we discuss this with?
Your father-in-law.
Stepfather.
I'm sorry.
But he was like a father. I mean,
Right.
I considered him a father.
And he started Aircept. What year?
1989 we started. In 91 we incorporated. So.
And were you there from day one?
I was there from 1991.
1991.
Yep. Cool. So I've been there the whole time working in the warehouse, or really the bedroom was the warehouse, you know, started in the condo. As a chemical company, we started an odor control chemical company.
Ingenious products. Please go to aircept.com, right? Is that the
aircept.com, yes.
Please go there and just look at some of these most innovative products. I looked at your display in the vendor room today, and there's some things that I had no idea how they worked.
It's also kind of an interesting aspect to learn or take a look. And one thing that I did learn is that Myron was very good at. It's not looking at today. It's looking at next year. What's coming up next year? What are the changes? And the importance of being at these shows and at these conventions and learning about the industry and what the future holds. And that's sort of where you learn about the problems that are going to be arising in the industry. And so that's one thing he was very good at teaching us at.
What about, you know, the whole thing that you talk, Peter, about Myron and talking to him almost every day, you too, Aaron, and me too, for a long period of time. Did we really realize that his goal was trying to mentor us and to push us?
I think I knew that later on. You know, we gave, I say we, because I was not an employee of Max at the time. I was certainly a member and a participant with Max, but we gave Myron a Pioneer Award. And I think I was on the board when we voted for that. And I think I brought it forward and said, we need to do this. We need to do this now, because I think we were in Las Vegas.
It was Las Vegas.
And Myron was living out in Long Beach. And we recognized that I think maybe Myron hadn't been at Apex. And, you know, Myron was a fixture in his scooter chair at Apex, right? You know, he didn't get in his way and so forth. But we recognized that Myron's traveling days were kind of coming to an end. You know, he was still with us. He was still, his mind was as sharp as anybody I can ever met, as sharp as any 18-year-old or 29-year-old or 45-year-old that you could ever imagine. But his body was failing him. And we decided that it was time to make sure that we gave him the recognition he was due. And so we brought him out to Las Vegas. I guess they drove out to Las Vegas, I think.
Yeah.
We were able to give him a Pioneer Award. And that was kind of a crowning achievement for him. The smile on his face that day was really amazing, because he just so appreciated being recognized.
Yeah.
For the hard work that he had done and all his intellectual property accomplishments.
Good for him. Do we need mentors in our life?
It doesn't hurt. I think it's helpful. I mean, it's good to bounce ideas off people, to listen, to get feedback. So a mentor can be somebody like Myron, your friend, Peter and I, or as we travel, or as we're sitting at in Germany at a hotel and talking about, what did you experience today? Or, you know, what did you see at the show? You know, something like that. It's extremely helpful.
Let me run an idea by you. Someone that you can trust to hear an idea as crazy, as off the wall as it could possibly be, mm-hmm. But wouldn't judge you.
Exactly.
Exactly. And understand that the idea itself may not be the right direction, but there may be a direction that is the right direction.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You get the right person to listen. And so I want to bring up one thing, because this is something Myron really taught me. My father taught me exactly the same thing, in same words. And it was listen to learn and learn to listen, because I was not a good listener. Because you would start talking and I would make an assessment of what you were trying to tell me way ahead of you completing what you were doing, whatever it was you were trying to communicate. So you need to listen to learn so that I can learn from you. And then I need to learn how to listen. And that learning to listen part is so important, because it may not be the words. Aaron may not be the greatest communicator. He is a great communicator, but he may not be the greatest communicator. And if he's not a great communicator, it's my job to interpret what he's trying to say in the way he's trying to say it, so that we can move the conversation forward and not be judgmental prior to understanding what they're really trying to say. And Myron and my father as well, but Myron was really, really good at kind of stressing that point. Because you would talk to him, and you're aware of this, you'd talk to Myron, and I would tell him, here's what's flawed about your idea. And he would say, okay, thank you. And then 4 hours later, or the next day, or 2 days later, he'd say, I took what you said, and I now agree with you, and here's the adjustment I made to take care of that concern. What else you got?
For me, he was willing to accept my think on some of his either recommendations to me or some of his ideas. And I realized, Aaron, that after a time, I wasn't there to listen all the time. I felt comfortable enough that I could give feedback, agree or disagree. And I think over the 4 or 5 years that I spoke to Myron almost every day, or at least every other day, I gained my confidence to be able to mentor back.
Mm-hmm. Some people call it discussion. We'd call it an argument. So it was the heated debates back and forth. It was a daily aspect. Every single day you'd get the phone call and you'd discuss the idea and you'd say, well, that's never going to work. And he's like, well, it's going to work this way. And then the next day that idea involves the next aspect. And that's that mentoring aspect, whether you're talking to a spouse, a friend, anybody else, as you're sitting there and saying, well, I think this can go. Is this a good idea? I've noticed this in the industry. And then you have a discussion point about that and you make that better. And that's how we come up with the new ideas and the new products and the new innovations that you're looking at, because you really have to innovate. You know, what we do is we don't want a Me Too type scenario. You know, there's plenty of people out there that can do that, but you really got to look towards that future and look towards where are things going and what are they doing? And that's where those discussions come in. And that's where the debates come in, whether it's internally, but it helps to have that discussion externally. It helps to have that with somebody that's not in that same forest as you on a daily basis.
And all those conversations end with a mutual respect.
Yeah.
That we're all trying to move the ball forward, and I may not agree with you, you may not agree with me, but somewhere in there is a good idea.
I never left a phone call with him, ever. I don't know about you guys, where I felt like it was going in the wrong direction. I felt like I wasted my time. There was always agree to disagree stuff. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Carm here, talking to you about what the Napa Auto Care Center program can do for your business. You probably already know the Napa brand is the most recognized and trusted name in the automotive aftermarket industry. In fact, studies show that nearly 95% of consumers recognize Napa and associate it with quality parts, service, and technical expertise. So why not complete a Pro Image upgrade and take advantage of that? Pro Image is a co-branding program for the exterior and interior of your shop. On the outside, it includes the Napa colors and distinctive Napa signage. While the public may know you as a reliable, locally owned business, a Pro Image upgrade helps set your shop apart from the competition even further. It's also a visual signal to customers and potential customers that you and Napa are partners. Most importantly, Pro Image really works. This co-branding opportunity has helped Napa Auto Care Centers across the country increase their car counts and sales. In fact, those that have completed a Pro Image project enjoy an average 23% sales increase during the first year. Pro Image upgrades are also available for the interior of your shop. A Pro Image interior upgrade transforms your customer waiting area from merely utilitarian to warm and welcoming. The goal is to maintain your shop's independent identity while enhancing the customer's experience. You can get a free look at what a Pro Image exterior or interior upgrade could look like by visiting the Napa Auto Care members site and clicking on the Pro Image link under the Napa Pro Image tab. Or contact your local Napa Auto Parts store. Your servicing Napa store can tell you more about Pro Image, plus the hundreds of other reasons to become part of the Napa Auto Care family, the largest network of independent automotive repair shops in the country.
You said listen to learn, learn to listen. What I learned a while back, maybe a long time ago, was listen to learn, talk to teach.
Sure.
And I think I bring that to the podcast because I care so much about what you say. Try to bring it into perspective. Be hungry to learn more. But when I try to open my mouth to ask a question, it's I'm trying to get your response to help someone who's listening. So you're the one who's teaching. I'm the one who's asking the questions. I think we have a communication problem in our industry, but that's a different podcast for different times. Aaron, I want to know the innovative products that you guys continually come up with. I mean, where does that juice come from?
I'm chuckling because I know Aaron's working on a particular project now and won't get into what that is, but that comes from a problem in the industry. And that problem in the industry is they're going to be a solution provider. So that's one of the places they come from.
It is. It's listening. It's learning what is out there, learning the problems people are having. It's shows like this. I can't tell you how many technicians come by and they'll say, well, I have this problem. Have you ever thought of that? And then the next person says, well, I have the same problem. And then you sit down and you look at it and you think to yourself, where can this go? What can this do? These two people have the problem. You know, there's 450 people there. Now five people have the problem. Then you ask the next person, have you ever seen this problem? Then all of a sudden, you recognize that it's the people that the technicians are having a challenge or whoever it may be is now challenged with trying to do this repair. Okay, so how are they repairing it? What can we do to make it better? Where do we go with this? And that's the whole idea is, you know, save time, save money. That's what everybody wants. You run into supply chain problems now. You can't get parts like you used to be able to. So what can we do to help on that problem? You know, what can we provide that solution to? I don't need to wait for this part anymore because I can do a repair that can solve this problem. It can save 2 hours of labor. We can still make money at it. We can save the customer time. We can save the customer money. So it's a balance. Shops need to make money. They can't pay bills. I mean, everybody works to pay their bills, and that's what the business is about. So what can we do to generate revenue, save people money, and get them on the road faster? I mean, nobody wants to leave their car at the shop for 2 days. Nobody wants to not have AC for 3 weeks while they're waiting on a part. That's where we sort of go with it and learning from the technicians. That's the most important thing, is being involved and talking with people within the industry.
I love it. You're listening to Aaron Becker, the president of AirSept, and that is AirSept.com. AirSept.
Yes,
because AirSept.com. I can say it, but how do I spell it? So it's AirSept, AirSept.com. And we're also with Peter Cole, the president and CEO of Max. Supply chain, you mentioned that. Did it really affect you during COVID?
Yes and no. So I know that's a general answer. It did immediately in the beginning, but we took steps to overcome those supply chain issues. So, you know, for our parts, we don't make brakes that are heavy and that require a container and very specific transportation patterns. So what we learned quickly is which ports had more availability to it. If we were bringing something in from overseas, we don't make a lot overseas. So that was helpful. You know, whether our metals come from, you know, we try to get everything from the US or we do a lot from Europe, Eastern Europe. We actually do a lot of machining, which is, you know, a unique area to work with. And so we had some challenges, but we weren't heavily dependent upon places in Asia or China or those regions where you had huge supply chain problems.
Yeah, your product looks so good. The precision, you know, they look like high quality. So is that why you go to Eastern Europe?
You know, we had a business partner or an associate, not really a partner, but a person we did a lot of business with who was based out of the Netherlands. And when we were supplying his company, it was easier to manufacture. And he researched manufacturers for us in Eastern Europe.
Okay.
And so it brought the product into the Netherlands faster, more efficient. And we were able to then be more cost competitive in Europe. And then as time went along and we started bringing some of that in for us.
New products. Do you have a goal of announcing a couple a month or so many a year?
We try to do probably 2 to 4 a year. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. We have a new one coming out. We'll hopefully talk about it next time, but we're okay. In the final stages of that product for It's a new filtration device, we'll call it, for some of the new refrigerants that are out there, or new refrigerant.
Just think about, I mean, I would love to find out. And can you give me a small overview of what it takes to, again, you discover, you research, you build, you test, you engineer. I mean, I just can't imagine what it takes to put out a product that you that would live up to your reputation.
It can be challenging at times. I mean, people look at our products and are like, wow, that's so simple. We sell a filter for the suction side of an AC system to stop debris from coming back into the compressor. So you replace a compressor that went bad, it put debris in the system, you put the new compressor on, and it sucks in the refrigerant. And if you don't clean the system properly, you can get debris coming back in. And people look at this, our piece, and they're like, oh, it's something so simple. It's a filter. It's just, it's a little, looks like a thimble. But it was 2 years of development. It was, you know, you have to get it to stay. You have to get it affordable. You have to make sure you maintain flow. You have to make sure, what happens if it clogs? Well, you don't want it to clog. What's the best way to prevent that from happening? So people look and they think it's a simple process when really it's years of development.
How many iterations of that product?
When we first started, we went through a lot because you don't want it sucked into the compressor. You don't want it to fill up. And, you know, one of the big things is it's kind of hard to explain, but it looks like a thimble.
Yeah, I saw it.
A basket. Yeah. And we used to flow into the basket. That basket would clog. And finally, we're like, well, what if we just turn it around and we flow around the basket so the debris will circle around and you maintain flow through the center? And so,
genius.
You know, something simple like that, there's a lot of testing to get to that point. And then, obviously, the shape of it and the details to make sure it stays in there. So,
it sounds like a fun part of
it's the best part.
Yeah. Okay.
And don't forget, I don't know if I can say his name or not, but you had an engineer who we worked with for a long time.
Yes.
I'll leave the person unnamed, but I got to know that person as well. And they were the person who, when this idea came up, they would run to Home Depot or Lowe's and they'd scour the shelves. And they said, well, let me grab one of these and one of these and one of these. And I'm going to rig up this just to see, is there something here that might work?
Inventing.
You know, it could be a bundt pan that we're going to use for some particular purpose or anything else. And a lot of that development, because I know when I was on the industrial side, a lot of that development kind of comes from that. You got this idea, but I don't want to invest in machining something or invest in, you know, it's easier now. We've got 3D printing. We didn't have that in the old days, or casting or molding. So let me find out what's already out there and let me try to just get an X-Acto knife and a drill and see if I can just prove a concept of some sort to move forward to make that next investment.
And that's exactly right. It's a lot of roaming stores, you know, the shelves, and taking a look and what can I make work to get this one test done, or what can we do for it? Looking through McMaster car catalogs or places like that to try to find something that you can alter to prove concept. And then once you prove concept, then you can take it to the next steps, because affordability is important. You know, you can't go out, even with today's 3D printing, if you want a good part to come in and do the testing, it can get expensive quickly. And so going, you know, just roaming the shelves or thumbing through catalogs, you know, now it's online, but nothing beats picking up a 3,000 page McMaster car catalog and just kind of flipping from page to page in the middle of the night, trying to find that one thing that you need.
Sleepless nights, 2 o'clock in the morning. What is this?
I have no idea.
I love it. So I don't know if you put it up on one of your slides, but you say, Carm, it's not HVAC air conditioning anymore. Mm-hmm. It's called thermo system management.
Yeah, it's thermal system management.
Man, that's sexy, isn't it?
It sounds good.
It does. You know, the old days of air conditioning were real simple, right? You had a compressor, you had some refrigerant, you had a condenser, you had an evaporator, and basically I'm going to dry the air, which is going to essentially cool the air. But it's not about the passenger compartment anymore. We've got the passenger compartment, but I have so many other thermal needs, especially when we get to electric vehicles, because I need to heat the passenger compartment. In the cold weather, I may need to heat the battery for better performance. I may need to heat or cool electronics, depending on what, you know, the conditions are. And you're now relying on what used to be the AC system to do all of that for you. It's, you know, total thermal management of the vehicle for everything. And it could be involve refrigerant, it could involve electronics, it could involve anything.
Today I heard you say heat pump.
Heat pump.
I never really learned what that was, but I do believe some houses have heat pumps, right?
Yeah, heat pump's very popular in a house. Essentially, it allows you to reverse the system and where you're getting air conditioning when it diverts one way and you get heat when it diverts the other way. Because, you know, air conditioning generates a lot of waste heat. So you're capturing or using that waste heat. And it's been very popular, of course, in homes for a long time. One of the challenges with heat pumps is they don't tend to work super well in the super cold because they're just not efficient enough in the super cold. And that goes for homes as well. We have heat pumps, not in my house, but several neighbors have them. But they also have a supplementary heat. So in case we get down to 12 degrees Fahrenheit, that heat pump just can't keep up and, you know, keep an ambient 70 degrees in the house. They'll have auxiliary electric heat that'll kick on. In the case of a motor vehicle, we've rarely used heat pumps in the past, although some new vehicles, some Kias, some Hyundais, new Subaru and a Toyota all use heat pumps. The advantage of a heat pump in one of those cases is our traditional ICE engine or gasoline or diesel engine had temperature. So we had coolant and that coolant would get warm. And then we would run that warm coolant into the passenger compartment into a heater core. And that would generate heat force or allow us to use the heat generated by the engine to heat the passenger compartment. You don't have that anymore with an electric vehicle. So I need to generate heat some way. So the traditional way of doing it is to use an electric heater, or a PTC heater, positive temperature coefficient, I think is what it stands for, heater, and basically an electric wire. But that draws a lot of power from the battery. And when it's really cold, that really can diminish range because I'm taking a lot of juice from the battery. So if we can find a way to generate the heat without using so much power, that's beneficial. And that's where the heat pump comes in. And one of the challenges with a heat pump is maybe the current refrigerants we have may not be best suited for a heat pump. They may not have the capacity or the range that's needed. So we're looking at new refrigerants, part of an SAE project. Aaron's a party to that. A new project to look at heat pumps, look at new fluids for the next generation of vehicles, electric vehicles, whether we think that the planet's going to be full of them in 2030 or whether it'll be 2100. We're still going to need thermal management systems for electric vehicles.
So pay attention. We have to pay attention. I mean, we just can't discount the fact that maybe I'll never see it in my lifetime, but it's out there, it's real, and we need to learn as much as we can.
Change is coming. You're going to see significant changes in the next few years as you look at different refrigerants, phasing out refrigerants, electric vehicles, how to cool them, how to handle the extremes on either side, the hot, the cold of cold, you know, how to get more mileage out of an electric vehicle or whatever the next vehicle may be. Because that's the biggest challenge. I mean, who wants to get a car every 30 miles? You have to plug it in because you're diminishing your range of the vehicle because it's 0 degrees outside or it's 105 degrees outside.
It's coming quickly. You know, from a max perspective, we don't see this an overnight change. But one thing we see is we see opportunity. And the opportunity is whether it's a company like Aaron, who they've been making great parts and great, you know, repair systems for various problem scenarios in ICE vehicles and traditional air conditioning vehicles. Now you get the electric vehicles and there's whole new opportunity. Maybe it's taking some of those same technologies, but maybe they're have to be slightly modified for the electric vehicles. And just like anything else, change takes time. It's coming. It's inevitable. I think everyone needs to be thinking about it. We don't need to harp on it. We don't need to dwell on it, but we need to understand it and we need to be ready for it as time goes on.
Aaron, are you making any parts for Tesla yet?
We don't really make parts. We make service.
I'm sorry. That's what I meant.
So we do. So with air conditioning, a lot of the service items will cross over. Some changes based upon either regulation or the way the systems work, but they still air conditioning systems. Unlike coolant or something of that, you know, oil, for instance, an electric vehicle, there is no oil. You know, that changes completely where air conditioning is becoming more used and the technology is relatively the same. Efficiencies are improved. So we do have the advantage that way with the AC or climate control really is what it is. I traditionally say AC, but it's thermal management.
Yeah.
And so it creates that opportunity. Now it's like it changes a little bit. So there is some good crossover. And of course, we're working on some new items for electric vehicles.
Guys, I enjoyed this. Thank you. I think we always want to hear about what's now and what's tomorrow. And Peter, I think you really helped us with this and good stuff at AirCept. I love the idea that people are coming up to you. I mean, there's 450 technicians here, but what a way to really to pull ideas. Did the same thing happen to you at Vision?
Vision's another really good show. Obviously, the Max shows is a good show. Yeah. You know, associations in general are so important, especially as we enter in the mobile side, but even in other industries, to keep that information flowing. It doesn't matter what industry you're in, change is coming to it. Restaurant industries have robots now delivering food or cooking food, or you walk through the airports, they have food vending machines, not like the old school vending machines, but fresh food coming out of it. It doesn't matter where you're in, whatever industry you're in, the importance of being part of an association or the importance of being involved in that industry's the value of it well exceeds the cost of being part of that industry.
So you'd recommend people to join Max?
I would recommend people to join Max. Absolutely.
MaxMobileAirClimate.org, but I'm going to give you two shortcuts. MACSW.org. That's Max Worldwide, but just the W. Or our freshest one, which we're kind of keep under a lid, max.ac, MACS.ac.
Oh, I like that.
We got to be careful with the AC because the AC is actually technically out of the Ascension Islands. But we have a great Max member, Supercool, who uses Supercool.ac. And we said, hey, why don't we just get Max AC? All go to the same place. So you can use any of them.
Peter Cole, President and COO of Max, and Aaron Becker, President AirCept. Nice to have you guys. Thanks.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.